Show on Starcom Radio Network. Our next guest will talk to us about how much of our personal lives we should bring to the workplace, and maybe we're bringing too much. We'll find out. Stand by. Karen Lund will join us, the CEO of Grief Sensitivity Training. Hi, Karen. Welcome to the Ed Till Show on Starcom Radio Network.
Thank you, Ed. I'm glad to be here. How
sure.
Are you?
I'm well. You know, I guess it looks this way right now to our topic. It looks like everything comes to the office. It looks like that when I remember starting out in business and actually in a radio station in the 70s, and it was pretty common for people to say, whoa, enough, you know, we're here to work. Whoa, enough, we're here to work. This is a workplace, not a hangout. So I do remember when none of it was really appropriate. I mean, it's true, your car gets a flat, you're late that day, but not Aunt Sophie, Aunt Margaret, your marriage, the kids, they got arrested, the da-da-da. And then, you know, it seems like we've gone all the way on that now. Everything is talked about by everybody in the workplace. How do we sort this out? What's appropriate? And what's overindulgent to just have some place to unload it all and interrupt a bunch of other people while they're trying to do stuff? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And it seems, I think part of this discussion has also changed because a lot of offices and the office atmosphere and the actual physical placement were in small departments, a lot of separate individual offices, a lot of individual floors, sometimes separate buildings. It kind of physically kept people apart other than maybe greeting one another at the coffee pot machine, you know,
right,
that area, whatever. But now with the open atmosphere that we have, it just seems that everybody has taken that open atmosphere and internalized it to really just kind of just say, well, listen, I hated the game last night. I just hated the fact that so-and-so got lost and now so-and-so's on the injury list. And what did you think about that game? And a discussion that might have lasted a minute or a couple of minutes now lasts a half an hour,
right,
maybe 40 minutes, maybe off and on the whole day.
Right.
And it's not relegated to Monday morning in football. It's Tuesday morning in football. It's Friday morning in football. It's high school. It's college. It's pro. It's basketball. It's hockey. And then you don't even get into the other issues where baseball in the summer, and then it could be money and cars and children and school and dating and vacations and aging parents and animals, food, politics. It's all there. And whether you want to listen to it or not, it can be extremely distracting. And it's interesting to me that people, rather than run away from it, are drawn to it and to those discussions.
Well, I have a theory. What's yours? I have a theory about that. There's no doubt in my mind that that is the prurient interest stimulated. Who doesn't want to watch something bad happen to somebody else so they can go back and feel superior? So I don't know that staring at a car wreck and all that stuff is good, but we do it. You know, if you tell us there's something horrible and unimaginable, we will race to go see what that is. You know, there's something there, right?
It is true. And sometimes I also think that it's the common thought of it's all about me. What did I do this weekend? And I want to tell everybody what I did this weekend. I went to a show. I went
right
to the islands. I went,
yeah,
you know, to on a cruise. It's all about me. And it's all of a sudden, it's how many voices want to join that conversation or feel that they want to. And I think there's also a dissection there based on the age groups.
Hmm. How so?
Well, I think that you have a tendency when you've been used to exposing all of your life on Facebook and on all the social media, that this is just another place It's another form of social media, really.
Right.
It's just that it's person to person, voice to voice, that sees that. So I really think you have a differentiation between employees that are maybe baby boomers that grew up in the 70s with that the office, there was an office way to act. You mm-hmm. were taught how to do that.
Right.
There was language. You were more or less schooled into what should be said, what was told not to be said, or you were told or pulled aside if it wasn't appropriate. And now anymore, people don't seem to do that. They don't want to pull apart and make those corrections, or they want to be part of what this is. So I think all of us are tolerant of a little bit of discussion about the weekend, especially if it's a gorgeous weekend in the summer or a winter weekend where there's a lot of skiing or that kind of thing. But it really goes way, way beyond. And there's something else, too, that of all the things that we can talk about whether we should bring into the workplace or not, the one thing that comes with us, whether we want it to or not, is loss.
And well, you know, that's a big one where, honestly, when you're working with somebody maybe in the next cubicle or whatever, that one's going to be hard to, you know, not acknowledge. You're going to see them look racked, and maybe they've had a day or two for bereavement, and they're coming back. But whatever the case, at least that one we do understand. I mean, look, we want to be nice to people in pain, right? So if they have experienced loss, that is a little bit different than just, you know, the chatty types that are just looking for spotlight on Monday when they come to work, right?
Well, it is. But what we've found out is that people don't know how to approach one another when there's been a loss. And a secondary level to that is, what kind of loss is it? Because in people's minds, they're differentiating between the loss of, say, a home or a car, or someone dies of cancer, to someone that might have died from an opioid overdose.
Hmm. Well, let me ask then, as a grief sensitivity person, what are some cues that we should use to discern different types of loss? That's a great question. I mean, you have somebody come in, if they lose a dog they've had for 12 years, that's going to be powerful stuff, man. They're going to be banged up pretty good after that loss. If their car got demolished and it's just a car and they have another car, it's, you know, a setback, but it's not like losing a pet or a family member. So what's a good way to distinguish between loss versus loss?
Well, what we do is we help people understand that one, they need to acknowledge the loss, but they need to be open to listening about it, but they also need to be open to not judging the loss. And that's where we seem to have a differentiation, because I've had people, I'm a big cat lover, I've traveled a lot. Dogs are a little tough to do, but I've had a lot of cats. And I've had people actually tell me, after I've shared with them the loss of a cat, "Oh, I don't like cats."
God. Right.
And that's happened more than once, Ed.
Right.
And what you do is, there's the circle again. It's about me. It's my judgment of your owning a cat.
Yeah, right.
And when you take a look at it, and that's happened, and we've had I had a situation where there was a senior in college, and she, her grandfather passed away, and she was telling the professor she was going to miss a couple days of classes, and she was very conscientious, she's senior graduating, she wanted to make sure nothing was wrong, and he just immediately said to her, "Well, it was only your grandfather." Now, here's a person of supposed respect, in a position to teach a very young person how to help her with her feelings. And he didn't even take the time to ask, "Well, did you know your grandfather? Did you live close to him?" Some people live far away from their grandparents. They don't know them very well. But it turned out that she lived the first 17 years of her life with her grandfather. And she was only 21.
Mm.
So he was very important to her.
Right.
So he taught her that her feelings and her love of her grandfather weren't important to him, whereas he could have had a very great and unique opportunity to teach a young person how her loss was important, and that he was sorry about that loss, and if there was anything that he could do, that he would be glad to help her, and just maybe even send her a card, just to say, you know, I want to share this loss with you as much as I can. And that wasn't the case. That's what I'm seeing in these companies and corporations now, and even in social circles. I've had some young people come to me and say, I don't know what to say to my boyfriend when he says he just broke up with his girlfriend and he's really, really upset about it, Ed. he doesn't know what to do about it. And I don't know what to say to him other than kid around or joke around. So you've got maybe our age group is very dependent on the younger age groups in terms of some of the social media and managing that. But this is a perfect example of us being able to teach and show younger generations how to reach out to one another and acknowledge a loss and to just listen and not judge.
Karen Lund is our guest, CEO of Grief Sensitivity Training. Karen has also written a handbook for workshops called Loss Etiquette. That'll be available in January, so just literally weeks ago. Her book entitled The Language of Grief, available in February. Boy, you're going to have a busy early 18, aren't you?
Absolutely. Why not? Huh? Start the year with a bang.
You got it. So here's a big question we talk about oftentimes, and maybe it does apply here. Over the last, say, 25, 30 years, you've had a workforce that has not come from a strong nuclear family. This is now the divorce abortion crowd of the 60s and 70s having grown up. So this type of real important support, grief sensitivity, this type of thing, this is what nuclear families were for, and it does look like, now that we've destroyed it, they have to scamper around with strangers to get human connection at the level they need, and that the nuclear family was doing this, but it got so trashed so hard, they wake up and there is no one that they're intimate with. So intimacies have to go cubicle to cubicle, have to be talked about on buses, trains, whatever, because home is empty. What's your thought on that?
Totally agree with you, but now I see an opportunity for us to, you know, what is going on in society is happening in our companies. Whether we want to acknowledge or not, we can't park everything at the front door before we go in. And this is one issue that you can't park at the front door. So we have an opportunity now as a manager, as an employer, and as an employee to cross those lines and start to share these experiences, because what's happening now is with the opioid epidemic, it's all age groups, Ed. It's not just a certain age group. Cancer, all age groups. Autoimmune diseases, all age groups. Shootings, all age groups. So all of a sudden, we are coming in that front door of all ages. I mean, many managers and employees are working with five different generations within their company. That's a lot of different dialogues to manage.
Sure.
But what we need to do is help people recognize very simple things in terms of just recognizing and listening and reaching out. Now, very younger generations aren't used to reaching out. They're used to reaching through their computers, through their social media. They're not used to reaching out as much physical.
Oh, isn't there, right, isn't that a huge problem? There is no genuine emotional content in the computer screen iPhone generation. They don't experience it because they don't have human experiences. What their dominant experiences is a high-definition, high-resolution image. I mean, how could they have anything emotionally inside of them? They live in an unemotional environment, but, you know, that's kind of by choice because their parents didn't offer anything. They wouldn't be living off that screen if the people in the other room were really offering something. Kids have been driven into the next room for generations long before the computer. It's the idea of parenting them. And now we got the generation with the least amount of parenting, and they're out there on their own. Yeah, tough.
Exactly. And so what are they doing? They're really reaching out through their computers through the dating sites. And we know how dangerous that is.
That's
to,
right.
to a lot
yeah.
of young people.
Absolutely. Everything.
So
go ahead.
They're reaching out. Ed, they're reaching out.
Right.
They want that connection. They just need some tools as to how to get it. And one thing that you can do is if you get together as a company and you educate people and you teach them and you let them learn that you as an employer, you as a manager care about your employees and not the rhetoric that goes along with it, that you show your employees that you can, let's reach out to one another. If there is a loss, how do we continue our productivity within the company, Ed,
right.
and still recognize the loss and help that person work through the loss? What if you have a star salesman, star manager, star exec, and they have a devastating loss of any kind, and they're not able to handle it? They're not able to do what they used to do. They can't be at the evening dinners four nights a week. They can't travel to Europe anymore. They've got two young ones at home.
Mm-hmm.
So do you want to lose a star employee because of something like this? Why not reach out, ask him, ask her, how can we help you? How can we realize some things to make it easier for you to get through this? And you don't think you would have a very loyal employee as a result of doing that? And what's wrong with loyalty? And it's like a bad word anymore, and it's not. So there are ways, and our workshops do this. We just get people so that they can talk about, okay, well, I don't really like dogs, but I can tell that you are really upset. Can I go with you when you pick up the ashes from your dog? You know, it's thinking about reaching out to someone who's had a loss that just doesn't even know what to do next. Is all they can do is get up in the morning, take a shower, maybe, and go to work because they know they have to. They have those bills. And wouldn't, they're grinding through their days emotionally. And to have someone reach out and say, let's go get lunch. Let's go have a cup of coffee. You know, is there something that you need? I mean, there's a lot of issues with everything that went down in Houston,
right,
and up in California.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people lost houses, they lost memorabilia, they lost their first grader's first report card.
Right.
You know, they lost antiques, they lost things that and photos that can't be replaced. And for someone that's only ever wanted or liked modern furniture, people might not be able to realize that, but they need to understand and jump over that acknowledging a loss, whether it's their own loss or not,
right,
just acknowledging that loss and understanding it is the first step to reaching out. And I always say that when you reach out, you reach within.
Interesting. All right. That's that. Right. You caught me by surprise with that one. Say that again. Now, when you reach outside,
you're
really
out,
reaching in.
You reach within.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Karen Lund is our guest, CEO of Grief Sensitivity Training. The book, the book will be out shortly in the next few weeks, Feather Thoughts for the Language of the Rainbow, the Language of Grief. And we're also talking about the workshops entitled Loss Etiquette. So what's going to be tough for people to do after they learn what is the most helpful?
One of the things I did in my workbook at the end of each of these little chapters is we do exercises. So here's the situation, and it may be real. It may be real in the company.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the situation. Let's talk about it. How are you going to approach someone? I've had people tell me that people will duck into an office, duck into the kitchen, duck anywhere rather than face them one-on-one after they've had a loss because they don't know what to say.
Wow.
So we reach out, we get people to reach out to one another and focus on the fact that they need an employee, a coworker may need some help. And we look at these families down in Houston. I mean, they've lost everything. What do you think they're doing for Christmas coming up? I mean, there's lots of things that companies can do and employees can do. We are the most generous, generous people, I feel, in the whole wide world. I haven't lived in the whole wide world, but I just see it every single day. And when things are tough, boy, we jump in with arms open and say, how can we help? And this is just a way that we can do this, that we need to do this from a corporate standpoint, from a business standpoint, and by understanding how to do it within a company, you can understand how to do it within your family. You can go home and help your family learn how to cope with loss. You can help your friends learn how to cope with loss. So what these workshops do, they not only help people in the companies, but they help people outside of the company as well, and your family. And that's all good. That's always a good agenda.
When do companies typically reach out? Do they wait until they have this, or do they reach out preemptively and get ready because the size of the employee pool is so big, they know this is inevitable?
It really depends. You looked at what happened, for example, down in Mississippi after the hurricane there, and you saw people reaching out in any way that they could, but everything was so compromised. The services were compromised. Electricity was compromised. Food was compromised. You know, all of that was compromised. That it was difficult to even establish a base, where do we go? And I think in a company, when companies don't do a very good job of finding out what's going on, I think sometimes, and also too, Ed, and this is what's very disturbing to me, is that when there is a suicide, and if it is drug-related particularly, or just a suicide, companies don't know how to deal with that in terms of letting other people know within the company. It's almost like, is the family going to be ashamed that people know this? Are schools going to be ashamed if they know that someone has committed a suicide? I've seen both areas compromised when it's known that there was a drug-related death.
Wow.
And that's horrendous as far as I'm concerned, because the people that are left to hurt are the people that are alive, that are left in that family, mm-hmm. or in that in those circumstances.
This sensitivity training workshop has something called a cubicle conversation. What is that? I'm reading about it right now. I'm on your website, which is griefsensitivitytraining.com, by the way, for those who want to follow. Go ahead.
Right. The cubicle conversations were something that we came up with. It was a way for us to reach out, to have one another, the coworkers reach out to one another. It was a way to say, this is a cubicle, because you have these cubicle conversations. If you're in a smaller office, the cubicles usually, and most everybody's in a cubicle anymore, usually they're half of a body height tall, sometimes 5 feet, sometimes 4 feet, sometimes
right.
less than that.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have a tendency all day long, if you're talking about business or other things, you know, you're having these cubicle conversations. And we thought it was a way to just reach out, help people reach out. Instead of talking about football or baseball, how are you today? How are you today? And can we have lunch? And also what people need to do when they're reaching out to people, sometimes the people that are grieving, that have suffered the loss, can't reach back right then.
Mm.
They just can't say no.
Right.
They just can't say yes. And a lot of people will feel that they're being rejected. Because, I reached out to her. I reached out to him. But they said no. And you have to understand that again, it's not about you. And it's not about your judgment of how they should be dealing with what
right.
their situation is.
Right.
There may be a lot more going on there than what you know.
Listen,
but
you know
you
something?
Need to do is,
right. I mean,
yeah.
I am so with you. But I have to say, it looks like this has been bred out of the population. I do think that people over 50 can make some connection here, but I think they're emotionally dead below. I mean, I would love to think that this could work for them, but, you know, they are obsessed with themselves. I don't think you're going to get many people, even under 40, that every sentence doesn't begin with I. everyone. And we were taught as kids, that's rude even, but that's where they live.
Yes.
It's the iPhone.
Yes.
It's the me world, my emotions, yes, my feelings, much more important. And, I mean, in a way, I feel for them because they were ripped off. They're from the abortion divorce era. You don't stand a chance in America born after 1965. You just don't. I mean, you can have anomalous parents, and you do stand a chance, but it would be because you're an anomaly. But if you're in the mainstream, this is, you know, something that was, what's the word, voluntarily surrendered. We don't need married families. We don't need nuclear families. And oops, we lost our way to comfort people with grief. Well, you know, that's I think they would easily, you know, make that trade. Can I have more of what I want if there's no family? Yes, we'll take it. Now they grow up and they need support. And they're very upset because nothing they've done has laid a foundation for any of this. So, you know, I'm hopeful for people, but you know, it's hard to get a result if you don't do any work your whole life to get that result and think you can rescue it at the end because you have a problem. I don't even know if you know, it's terrible, but you expect those people to fail. They're expected to fail. How could you possibly be...
I see that, but at the same time, Ed, when you look at the deaths from cancer, and I hate, you know, talking about this, and the opioid deaths.
Right.
It is there in their faces every single day. And you may not be grieving, but you probably know one or other, two other people that are.
Right.
And if it has to start with something as basic as knowing how to treat your buddy when they've lost a girlfriend as a start, even in a corporate discussion, that's a very easy place to start. And it can go into, because at some point in time, they're going to have someone that means something to them that dies, and they need a way to help put it back together and put those pieces back together, because they can never be put back together the same way.
Right. Wow. You are a fantastic guest. I just looked up and I'm like, no way. Half an hour already? Well, you must come back because we have your books coming out. January, it is the... let's see, the book title, The Language of Grief, oh, pardon me, February. The Language of Grief in February. And you have your greeting card line. You got a lot of things going on in the new year, so will you come back and we'll talk some more?
I would love to. And I'd like to leave you with a quote if I could.
Please.
Two things. To all those who grieve in silence, may you find someone who encourages you to tell your story. And last of all, we're all just walking each other home. That's by Ron Dust, but I really feel when you hear that statement and you let yourself feel that statement, is that we are all here together to help each other. That's the bottom line.
I'm telling you, Karen, beautifully stated, very moving, and we've only begun to understand the subject. So thank you for the primer today, and we'll be back for lesson number two shortly, and congratulations again on your upcoming releases. Thank you. If you would like to reach out to Karen Lund, you can go to the website right now, www.griefsensitivitytraining.com.